Hello there. Welcome to MotoGPOD, the podcast about motorcycle road racing. I'm Bob Hayes, your host, and it's Friday, September 30th, 2005. We've got some good topics today, including a very cool reader email question about some American perceptions of Hayden's situation at Honda, a brief journey in the Wayback Machine to Qatar 2004, look at the World Championship standings before Qatar, before the Qatar race, and because, yes, there are still racers out there, trust me, who are going to be competing for spots in that championship, even if they can't possibly win it. And then we're going to finish up with a preview for the Marble Grand Prix of Qatar, along with a report about the first two practice sessions that have already occurred. This is a Saturday race, which kind of messes up the schedule in a big way, but it does give me more time to look into the practice results and still get the podcast up early on Friday morning Pacific time. So that's one good thing that comes out of it. But before we do all that, there's a few comments that I'd like to make. First of all, a big shout out to Matt Searles, and I apologize about the pronunciation name. I'm not sure what to do. Searles, I think it is, for his donation to the cause of MotoGPOD. I appreciate that a lot, Matt. I really do. And I apologize for failing to mention it in the last episode. I guess, I don't know, maybe I was so excited by Sepang that I just sort of spaced it out. But in any case, thank you very much. Also, a big thank you to the various people who are doing a little advertising for me for MotoGPOD on various internet forums that I participate in. I see in the web logs, you know, these little spikes of visitors coming to MotoGPOD.com from various sort of places and forums on the internet. And, you know, there's kind of no way that I'm going to go to some internet forum and register for that forum, you know, when it's a forum that I've never participated in, just so I can put up an advertisement for my podcast. I kind of think that's, you know, a little spammy. So it's not something that I'm likely to do. It's, you know, those are good forums and everything, and thank you very much for advertising in them, but it's not my place to come to your forum and sort of horn in like the uninvited guest with some advertising. It's probably more annoying like than when you're in a restaurant and having a nice conversation and some guy comes up trying to sell flowers or take your pictures or something. So I really appreciate that as well. A little free advertising for me. Thank you very much for MotoGPOD. Appreciate it. And which reminds me, in the past week, I think it was on Tuesday actually, MotoGPOD was the 97th highest rated podcast in iTunes in Austria. So it's cool. I love it. Got to get my props wherever I can. Each episode is downloaded about 1,000 times, and I get a whole lot of email, so I definitely don't feel like I'm just kind of talking to myself here. I know that there are people out there listening, so hello, guys. But on the other hand, it is a fairly, you know, comparatively niche sort of subject, as motorcycle road racing is, so I really have no illusions about, you know, beating the Don and Drew show or all of the multitude of sex podcasts or any of this kind of junk at the numbers game. If you search for racing in iTunes, for instance, you're going to find that MotoGPOD is pretty consistently pummeling the competition. You know, podcasts that cover series that are supposedly way, way more popular, like NASCAR, for instance, and several others. So, you know, within my chosen sort of market, MotoGPOD is doing quite well, and you know, that's cool. I appreciate it. And the thing is that you guys out there, all the listeners, are the ones that are making that happen. And thank you very much for making this so much fun. And, you know, like I said, I'm getting to email people from all over the world, having a lot of interesting conversations. I'm having a good time. It's sort of forcing me to really pay attention to MotoGP and learn more about it and follow even more closely than I do when, you know, I wasn't doing the podcast. So overall, I'm having a good time. Whatever. Enough of that. Let's get the party started here with some more interesting stuff. MotoGPOD listener Francesco Ardia and I have been emailing each other quite a bit lately here. Francesco lives in Italy, and he asked me a question about some perceptions that we have here in the United States about Nicky Hayden at Honda. I ended up basically writing a big old book in my reply, so I figured that it would make a good podcast segment to sort of why spend that effort and just have it go out on an email. So here's what Francesco asked. He says, in MotoSprint, there was a brief article on what Nicky Hayden has been up to in the last 2 years. Before I say anything else, I must say that MotoSprint is known to be quite Italian-centric, if not Rossi-centric, which is one aspect of why I don't see it as the best source of information about everything. The article says that whilst many of the other Honda riders have been reconfirmed or have been almost definitely pointed onto other teams, no one is saying anything about Nicky Hayden. Even Fiorani himself, which that's Carlo Fiorani, the Repsol Honda team manager, by the way, even Fiorani himself is not saying anything or even being asked anything. Motosprint goes on saying that no one has the guts to ask Fiorani because they all know that Hayden will be reconfirmed in HRC Repsol no matter what. The pretty strong critic, and actually I assume that Francesco means the article's author when he says the pretty strong critic, goes on saying that reconfirming him is not a very wise move since in two seasons he, Hayden, hasn't really been the promise of a talent that HRC had said he would be. It's said that the Laguna Seca victory is not enough to put him right, and in any case, he's nearly always finished behind Biaggi. But the strongest accusation comes from the fact that it's said that Nicky Hayden will remain where he is because this is the will of Honda USA, which has enough political and economic power to drive the choices of Honda Japan. Whilst Hayden may have not met the big expectations of him for last and the current season, it is also clear that no other rider within HRC or satellite teams is capable of saving Honda anyways, or who deserves, with full marks, a place in HRC. This is more or less what the article said. I was also discussing with some enthusiasts over here in Italy, and the opinion may not be as radical, but most people say Hayden has had a good couple of years to adapt, and he has proven to prove himself with HRC, and perhaps that someone else should take his place soon, but this is not going to happen because there are bigger interests at play. Okay, good stuff, Francesco. Actually, reading that one last sentence of the paragraph where you say that whilst Hayden may have not met the big expectations for him of his last and current season, it is also clear that no other rider within HRC or satellite teams is capable of saving Honda anyways. I'm a little confused but with that part. So I'm just going to skip that part and talk about the rest of it. And basically, here's what I think. First of all, Hayden isn't doing that badly compared to Biaggi. I'd say that they are just about even. In 7 out of 13 races so far this season, Biaggi has scored more points than Hayden, and Hayden scored more in 5 of those races. They both crashed out at Donington, so it's only added up to 12. As far as points are concerned, before the Qatar race, so not counting Qatar, Biaggi has 159 points, 25 points more than Hayden's 134. Yes, Biaggi is leading, but it's not a hugely comfortable lead considering there's 4 races left. And although Biaggi's been on the podium several times, he has not won a single race this season. Now that said, the perception that Honda USA really wants Hayden on the HRC ride is pretty common over here in America. And that also that there's a lot of political issues at work. And that is definitely a very common perception here in America. Honda USA is actually using Hayden in some relatively mainstream advertising now, television commercials and so forth. And of course, there's tons of ads in motorcycle magazines featuring Hayden, which is kind of really no surprise. Hayden's also getting appearances on non-motorcycle related television, like that stupid dating game thing that he did on the Today Show, and his appearance on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and a show called World of Adventure Sports ran a segment about him as well. That kind of exposure is huge compared to anything that I ever remember seeing in, at least the past 10 years or more on regular old TV that had anything to do with motorcycle racing, because you would have, for all intents and purposes, not even realized there was such a thing as motorcycle racing. In fact, there was a TV commercial not too long ago where Hayden is riding a Honda Goldwing, that big, giant Luxo touring barge, and Hayden is just scraping the engine cases going around the corners, showing that this giant of a motorcycle can handle like a sporty bike. And that was a really pretty good commercial, and hopefully it sold some motorcycles. So, you know, that's an example of them using Hayden to their advantage, you know, Honda USA. Now, I'm not necessarily defending Hayden's seat at HRC, because in some ways I tend to agree with the bashers. His performance hasn't been as great as I'd hoped, and it might turn out that he isn't the great American racer that everyone seems to have to want to find in order to unlock this U.S. consumer market for the wonders of MotoGP, which isn't going to happen anyway until they have, you know, Harley Davidsons and cool custom choppers in MotoGP. For it's just, you have to re-educate the entire American population. On the other hand, it often takes riders several years to build up, and Hayden is really improving, so maybe HRC is just showing some patience. Many excellent racers go for a long time before really hitting their stride. Also, the combination of Hayden and Pedrosa, next year will give HRC two young riders that both bring a lot of advertising power to the table. And Hayden is also very charismatic. You can't really say the same thing about Pedrosa. He's a little robotic, I think. But I do also think that he's going to grow Pedrosa, and he'll get better from a publicity standpoint. But Hayden is already there. So, you know, I think that's really important to the teams as well. Well, maybe not, because on the other hand, look at Kimi Räikkönen in Formula 1. You don't want to talk about a robot. But he's got Juan Pablo Montoya as his teammate, who some would call charismatic, some would just call difficult. But and actually, Kimi Räikkönen's pretty charismatic in nightclubs, so whatever. I digress. Sorry. So I think that Hayden's going to be back next year. His contract is still in effect. Honda might very well be waiting to make an announcement for all kinds of reasons. They might even be thinking that why should they announce something that's just staying the same? No new contract, no sacking of Hayden, just the same old situation. You know, is that news? You know, normally they do announce these things, so it's a little mysterious, but whatever. However, as I said at the beginning of this year, Hayden had to do well to keep his seat. And I think that the last four races of this year are definitely going to have something to do with his future. Hayden should be very happy about his win at Laguna Seca, because, in my opinion, that was a very, very important win for Honda. They really wanted to beat Yamaha there, maybe even more than they do, you know, at Motegi. Well, as much as at Motegi. And the fact that the second and third spots at Laguna Seca were taken by Yamaha's should only build on Honda's status, or Hayden's status, excuse me, in Honda's eyes. Because if he does come back next year, and I think he will, then that is truly going to be the year that Hayden needs to start performing, or he really runs the risk of becoming an also-ran in the history of MotoGP. And really, the political side is not all that unusual of a situation in any case. You could pretty much say the same thing about Carlos Checa, that one of the reasons he continues to get a ride after a long career, you know, a good career, but not exactly a stellar career, but one of the reasons that he continues to get that ride is because he's a Spaniard, and the Spanish market is just so important for MotoGP. I mean, even Giovinazzi's move to Ducati all kind of hinges on his relationship with Telefonica and all of that. Telefonica got bent out of shape about the decision to bring Pedrosa to the Repsol Honda team instead of the Telefonica-sponsored Gresini Racing satellite team, and they decided to take their money out of MotoGP and plow it into Formula One, where they have a Spanish driver that's now the youngest Formula One champion ever, chock full of charisma, blah, blah, blah. And so at that point, Gibernau became much less important to the entire Gresini Racing team and to Honda, and apparently they weren't willing to pay his salary and put up with everything else, and he's moved on. So that's kind of what I think about that whole situation. Okay, let's take a little journey in the Wayback Machine. Woo! To Qatar 2004. And last year's race at Qatar was really kind of a little bit different. If you remember, there was a small problem after the qualifying session. Valentino Rossi had the 8th quickest time in qualifying, and Max Biaggi was the 12th fastest, but that's not how the grid lined up for the race. Apparently, Friday evening, after qualifying was over, Biaggi's mechanics were cleaning his position on the grid, trying to get rid of some of the dust and dirt and so forth to improve grip. And the 12th spot where Biaggi was is way off the normal clean racing line, and anything to clean it up is going to help Biaggi get a better launch. Rossi saw this, and the next thing you know, guys from the Gauwaz Yamaha team are doing burnouts on pit bikes on Rossi's starting position on the 8th spot there on the grid to lay down some rubber and also get rid of some dust and improve his launch. Other teams saw all this happening, and apparently it's a big no-no in the rule book, so complaints started making their way up to race direction. Apparently, Repsol Honda was the one team that officially lodged a protest against Rossi and his team. But several other teams were just about to do so, and race direction decided that hearing multiple protests about the same incident was going to be counterproductive and so on and so forth. So the only official one came from Repsol Honda, and that one was filed. After the morning warm-up, race direction imposed a 6-second qualifying time penalty on Valentino, which moved him to exactly last on the grid. Then, Gauwaz Yamaha, Rossi's team, protested against Biaggi's team in the sort of, hey, you know, he did it too kind of maneuver. And Biaggi got the same penalty imposed on him, so that put him behind Biaggi for the actual start. All of this upset Rossi immensely. He was definitely not a happy camper, and he wanted vengeance. So when the lights went out, Rossi just got a tremendous start. And in the first lap, in just the first few corners of the first lap, he moved up from like 21st to 8th place. He continued that charge up the order and made it to 4th position by the 4th lap. Then, on lap 5, he put his rear tire over the curbing. And at Qatar, they use AstroTurf instead of grass there. And either Rossi sort of overlooked that fact, or he went a little bit wider than he planned, or what have you. But that AstroTurf to concrete transition caught the bike's tire, and bam, he went down. He's done. And the race ended up being kind of a war of attrition. It was a good race. Other than, you know, the Rossi incident right there was kind of like, wow. But, you know, other than that, it was still a very good race. Gibernau ended up winning after leading for pretty much the entire race. Colin Edwards came in second, and Ruben Chaus third. I believe it was the best finish of the season, best finish since. But all of that's not the end of our little tale. There had been some friction already going on that season between Rossi and Gibernau for some yellow flag issues earlier on in the season, but by and large, Rossi and Gibernau were on pretty friendly terms. You know, maybe not major drinking buddies or anything like that, but they weren't certainly not getting into fist fights on the way to the podium or anything like that either. But after Qatar, all that was over. Maybe no fist fights, but pretty much anything else was okay. Rossi said some fairly nasty things in press interviews about Gibernau, and Gibernau during this actually played the part, you know, kind of the better man, saying that, you know, that those comments were probably said in the heat of the moment, and, or that they were taken out of context, that sort of thing. Rossi basically said that he meant it. And at the next round in Malaysia, during the pre-race press conferences and stuff, you could cut the tension with a knife. Rossi put all the blame for his Qatar problems squarely on Gibernau's shoulders, and pretty much all but calling him a big old tattletale, neener, 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 and all that kind of business. And Gibernau, kind of understandably, was a little upset by all this, and was basically sort of trying to move on, and saying that it was Repsol Honda that did the complaint, not me, I'm not a Repsol Honda rider. You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of taking it to heart that, you know, wanting things to be the way they were, where everybody's good friends, you know, but Rossi wasn't playing it. And it, the thing is, it wasn't about Rossi being mad at Gibernau for some perceived slight or another. It was about Rossi playing his psychological mind games with Gibernau and getting him all worked up and thus distracted from the job at hand of racing. And you'll notice that Gibernau has not won a race since, just like Rossi said he would not, because he's let it affect him. So, needless to say, I don't think they've taken any holidays together ever since then. And another fun fact about Qatar was that, in 2004, was that in the 1-2-5 race, it was the closest finish in motorcycle Grand Prix history, with Jorge Lorenzo and Andre Dovizioso both finishing with a time of 39 minutes, 11.620 seconds. That's right, they classified with the same time to a thousandth of a second. If you check out the finish line photo on MotoGP.com, Lorenzo is leading Dovizioso by just about the height of a tire sidewall. I mean, you're talking a few inches at most. I don't think the riders even know who had won it until they saw it all on the Jumbotron. And it's that is close racing. So, it's going to be a good one again this year. The championship may be locked up by Valentino Rossi, but the race for second is still up in the air, big time. Mathematically, there's 10 riders with enough points to pick up the season runner-up position, and there's 5 riders that I think have a realistic shot at it. So let's take a look at some of these numbers real quick. Obviously, in first place, Valentino Rossi, 281 points. Nobody can catch him. He is the world champion for 2005. Enough said. Congratulations, Valet. Good job. Outstanding. To finish that up on with still 4 races remaining in the season is a cool thing. In second place, before the Qatar GP, all these standings are as of now, as I record this now, before the Qatar GP. Second place is Max Biaggi, 159 points. Max had some pretty good races this season. Not truly spectacular, but very, very consistent. He's only failed to score points in one race, which is at Donington. Otherwise, he's done very well, several podiums and all of that. Or, well, a couple of podiums. Third place, Loris Caporossi, the comeback kid. Loris has 142 points, but his last 3 races with a second place and 2 wins have really vaulted him up the charts. That moved him up from 9th place before Brno. So the three races there, he jumped up from 9th to 2nd. Or, excuse me, 3rd, sorry. 2nd in the race for 2nd. Fourth place, Colin Edwards, 139 points. Colin had a strong midseason, did real well with three podiums, including his nice second place there at Laguna Seca, but he's kind of tapered off a little bit in the last four races. He's still in the hunt. We're going to see how well he does in the four races remaining. A 20-point gap between him and Biaggi in four races is not really a gigantic amount to make up. It all kind of depends on where everybody else finishes. It's definitely doable. Fifth place, only 2 points behind Edwards on 137 points, is Marco Melandri. Now, Marco got off to a stupendous start. Do you like that word? Stupendous? Stupendous. Sounds, very professional, isn't it? Stupendous start this season. Finishing in the top four for each of the first seven races. He finished no lower than fourth place in the first seven races, and he maintained a strong second in the championship during that time, but then crashes at Laguna Seca and Donington seem to have kind of brought things to a halt. And then this crash at Motegi really didn't help because he injured his foot, and that caused him, so that means that Sepang the following week, he's riding with his badly injured foot in Malaysia. So I don't know for Marco for the rest of the season, but he's come a long way up from last year, a huge amount from last year, and it is definitely possible, kind of marginally, because I think of his injuries and some other issues, but it's marginally possible that he can make up the ground on Biaggi, Cavarossi, and Edwards, and come in second in the championship again. Then the last of the riders that I think might have a realistic shot at second place is Nicky Hayden in sixth place right now with 134 points, 3 points behind Marco. Now, you might ask, why did I go down 25 points from Max Biaggi down to Nicky Hayden with 134? Is this because I'm an admitted Hayden fan? Well, possibly. But it's also due to the fact that 4th, 5th, and 6th are covered by 5 points. So Colin Edwards, Marco Melandri, Nicky Hayden, you're only separated by 5 points there. And I don't kind of think that Marco is that much of a factor due to that injured foot and so on. So you're kind of ruling him out. And it's not so unrealistic to imagine Nicky picking up maybe a couple of podiums in these last four races. No laughing now. And the way the points are scored in MotoGP, it's so heavily weighted for the top three finishers in each race. So a few missteps by Biaggi and Edwards and some strong performances by Hayden, on the other hand, could really see him making up that point difference in no time at all. It's kind of a long shot, admittedly, especially when you look at Biaggi's overall sort of average record this season. But all it's going to take is like a DNF for Biaggi and maybe a second place or something like that for Nicky, and he's made up most of that deficit. So we'll just have to see what happens. I'm not making any rash promises here. And just to be fair, even though they are realistically out of the running, mathematically they have a shot, but realistically they kind of don't. We have Alex Barros in 7th place on 122 points. Sete Gibernau, 8th place, 115 points. Carlos Checa, 9th place, with 88 points, 29 of which came in the last two races, by the way. Shinya Nakano in 10th with 69 points, and Makoto Tomata, 11th, with 68 points. Kenny Roberts is 12th with 58 points, and even if he were to win the four remaining races, which, ain't going to happen, Kenny is mathematically incapable of catching Biaggi. So, like I've said, even though the championship itself is locked up, there's still going to be some really strong performances by lots of riders. Some good stuff to watch for another month or so. The LaSalle Circuit is located on the western side of the Persian Gulf, just outside of Doha, the capital city of Qatar. And it was used for the first time last year in 2004. It's a desert location where air temperatures are averaging around 99 degrees Fahrenheit during the day, which is about 37 degrees Celsius, and track temperatures around 120 degrees Fahrenheit or 49 degrees Celsius. These high temperatures play an important role in the race. Last week's race in Malaysia was also in a very hot climate, so settings for the motorcycle from Sepang could be a good starting point for Qatar because of the heat similarities. On the other hand, you know what they always say, it's a dry heat and it's just so much more comfortable, which, right. Still sucks if you ask me, way too hot. The circuit was built in a little over a year for a cost of $58 million, and it required round-the-clock dedication from almost 1,000 workers in order to get it ready for the inaugural event, which was last year's Marlboro Grand Prix of Qatar. There's a good mix of medium and high-speed corners, including a couple of real-quick left-handers, which proved especially popular with the riders. The track designers didn't use any rhythm-disrupting chicanes, They created a fascinating track layout with several high-speed corners and two tighter hairpins. This makes LaSalle a circuit of contrasts, but not so much as Donington, that's almost like two different circuits in one. LaSalle has 6 left and 10 right-hand turns, making up a 3.35-mile, or 5.4 kilometers if you prefer, circuit, with a basically nice flat surface. The start-finish straight is 1,068 meters long, well over 6/10 of a mile for those of us that think in standard. But in addition to that intricate circuit layout and the high track temperatures, there's another factor that's going to come into play big time, and that is sand. As the track is located in a desert, the track surface is covered in fine sand, which means that grip levels can be deceiving and inconsistent or non-existent. The relatively fast corners will clearly require stability from the bike chassis and the suspension setup. Another target is going to be good, stable turn-in characteristics and a setup that offers easy changes in direction. Weight bias will start off as neutral as possible to prevent the front tire from overloading in the midpoint of a turn, while also ensuring good drive off of the sides of the rear tire. A slightly lower center of gravity could be utilized to improve the pitch rate and the bike's ability to change direction quickly. With only 2 hard braking areas at turn 1 and at the turn 6 hairpin, forked springs are going to be biased slightly towards the softer side to maximize rider feedback. It will also be a similar case on the rear with the spring rate there. Power delivery is going to be needed to be mapped to provide the best mid-range torque and predictability to provide drive off the turns while still being able to hit that 200 miles per hour or 300 kilometers an hour, 320 kilometers an hour, on that long straightaway. So, thank you again, as usual, to Yamaha for the setup information. Now for Free Practice 1 results. In Free Practice 1 earlier today, actually yesterday, which was Thursday, Nikki Hayden clocked the fastest time. Nikki Hayden, yay. Leading a Honda 1-2-3, as Movistar Honda riders Sete Germinal and Marco Melandri were second and third fastest ahead of Valentino Rossi. Marco seems to definitely be recovering from that injured foot. It still may well be a factor. A lot of times a foot can really mess you up on a motorcycle. But it's good that he's doing so well there. Suzuki's Kenny Roberts Jr. was 5th fastest, making him the highest placed Bridgestone runner. So there goes one of my predictions that the Bridgestones might shine in Qatar. Although, you know, this is only free practice. Everybody's sandbagging and so forth. So it's quite an achievement, actually, for Kenny Roberts when you figure that he didn't race here last year at all. So this is the first time out on this track. In fact, this is, you know, the first hour. First free practice is the first time he's been out on that track on a motorcycle. Junior was followed by Carlos Checa on the Ducati Desmo Sedici GP5 in 6th place, and Rossi's teammate Colin Edwards in 7th. Ahead of Fortuna Yamaha rider Tony Elias and John Hopkins on the other Suzuki. Well, Loris Caporossi, winner of the last 2 GPs, by the way, completed the top 10 for that first practice. Olivier Jacques, riding a Kawasaki for the injured Alex Hoffman, crashed heavily, hurting his back and requiring a hospital trip, unfortunately. Whether or not he's going to be fit to ride for the race is kind of in question. It's uncertain. He wasn't in the afternoon afternoon practice session. Alex Barros also crashed in the session, but he escaped unhurt. In free practice session number 2, Rossi bounced back to the top of the timesheets. Rossi left it until his final lap to clock his fastest time of 1 minute 58.714 seconds, which beat last year's pole position set by Carlos Checa by almost 3/10 of a second. That's Carlos's pole position record, not the track race record, which is typically faster. So, you know, I mean, Rossi was on a Q-tire, but this is the first practice session he goes out there and breaks the record by 3/10. Rossi said, "For sure, myself and the whole team are more relaxed now that we have won the world championship. The track conditions are much better than they were last season. They're still not 100%, but compared to the first practice last year, there is much more grip. As long as there is no wind or rain overnight, it should improve a lot more by Saturday." Well, probably be okay on the rain front there, Valentino. I don't know about the wind, though. Okay, the day's surprise package, though, was Tony Elias. Briefly occupied the top spot in the second session with a record lap of his own until Rossi's late charge. And this is from, you know, pretty much out of nowhere that Tony has decided to start doing this. And this is the kind of performance that I've been hoping for from Elias. after having seen what he can do and seeing him do so well in the 250cc races last year and the year before, he seems to have found a setup that's working for him, and hopefully he can make it continue, and hopefully he can do well in this race. The guy needs it. He's really been kind of poking along. Okay, Hayden showed good consistency in this session, leading the times for much of the hour before the big push on Q tires right there at the end. Hayden eventually set the third fastest time, ahead of Loris Caparossi in fourth. Loris is looking for his third win in a row, and I kind of predicted that this track might suit him, largely because of those Bridgestone tires and some similarities that I thought of between here and Sepang Motegi. But we're going to have to see where he qualifies. Like I said, there's only free practice. Cheka ended up fifth fastest for the session, followed by Edwards and Melandri. Hopkins moved up a position to eighth, while bearded warrior Max Biaggi picked up ninth in the afternoon session after only managing a pokey 11th in the morning. Alex Barros finished up 10th fastest for the afternoon session. I'm not sure if he's on his backup bike or if they managed to get the primary fixed from his morning crash or what. Roberts, Kenny Roberts, went down to 11th. And not that I'm overly trying to bash Kenny Roberts, not me, no way. But the quotes that Suzuki sent out are very indicative at things at Team Suzuki. John Hopkins said, "Today has been pretty much a lot of street sweeping. That's really what we went out on track doing this morning. We didn't really get a whole lot to work with on setup. It's obvious what tires we're going to use, the hardest front and the hardest rear. This afternoon, I felt like an amateur out there. It felt like I was club racing. I was struggling with my lines and my riding style. I like to run it in hard into the corners, but how the track is, it's pretty much of an impossibility. I had to change my riding style, and on the last lap, I tried something completely new, completely different. I changed my line and found a second alone just in the improvement I made on the track. We still have a lot to do with the setup of the bike, but I'm confident that we can run in the top eight consistently and stay there. It's now my turn to go out and haul ass." So, thank you, John Hopkins. Very, you know, excited sort of quote. On the other hand, Kenny Roberts Jr. said, "A normal first day, really. There's not much to say. Bridgestone gave us some new tires this afternoon that were much better than this morning, so lap times improved. We will keep on trying with what we have and try to figure out which combination of tires we will use for the race and what setup. We still have a lot of work to do on setup to get a little bit of a better balance for the machine." Okay. Even if I didn't do the fake voice thing, which really isn't fair because, I mean, these were written quotes when I read them, so I have no idea how they said it. But even if I didn't do that fake voice thing, just the words alone tell you a lot. Hopper is enthusiastic and you know, rah-rah and on the ball and excited about it. And Roberts is just like, you know, please let me end this. End my misery. Kill me now. It, you know, it just, it's aggravating. So, sorry, back to the timesheets. Last year's race winner here at Qatar, Sadie Gibernau, could only manage the 12th fastest time in the afternoon after his number 2 spot of the morning. Gibernau said, "The morning session went relatively well, but in the afternoon we did a series of tests which were quite risky, but we had to try them, and they did not give us the results that we hoped for." Well, that's what practice sessions are for. Hopefully they'll get it time, you know, get it together in time for qualifying. Hopefully Gibernau is in sort of a better state of mind than he was last week, where he basically goes out and I can't win this race, you know, because just like Kenny Roberts there, you know, go out with a bad attitude, just like your mother used to tell you, you know, don't have a bad attitude because it's just going to make things worse. Got to make the best of it. I mean, everybody should be out there trying to win. You know, even these poor guys in the back, Ellison and Bataini, you know, consistently doing their best. You know, they want to beat each other. They want to see if they can beat, you know, the bottom rung Ducati and the other bikes that are typically at the back of the pack. So they're racing as positively as hard as they can. And you don't go in there and say, "I can't win." So whatever. 13th fastest, Shinya Nakano, followed by Makoto Tomata, 14th fastest time of the session. And as the riders got used to the circuit and the track surface kind of rubbered in and cleaned up a little bit, everyone improved their times from the first to the second session. But Tomata improved his from the second session to the first. He improved his time by more than 4 seconds, a huge amount, huge gain over his dismal morning session where he was only 18th fastest, by the way. So he did much better in the afternoon. Then, 15th in the afternoon session was Robbie Rolfo on the Satellite Ducati. 16th was Ruben Chaus, not quite finding that magic setup like teammate Elias did. And 17th, Shane Byrne. Shaky was 17th in both the morning and the afternoon. I kind of didn't expect him to do all that well here. It's his first time at the circuit, and he's on a relatively unfamiliar bike, and it you know, it must be a lot like going from the Wright Brothers Flyer to the Concorde when you compare the, you know, the Proton KR to the RC 211V. But it's still kind of a disappointment. I thought, you know, Shaky might be able to come out here and to these two races that he's got this opportunity and just kind of really shine. And so far it hasn't sort of happened. But there's a lot more racing the weekend, and ain't over yet, so I'm going to cross my fingers. But, you know, you can only sort of say, well, you know, he never raced at Qatar before. Well, neither did Kenny Roberts. He managed fifth fastest in the first session, even though he choked in the second one. But whatever. Go, Shaky. I'm crossing my fingers for you. Let's see you do well. 18th and 19th fastest in the afternoon session were James Ellison and Franco Battini on the WCMs. More sadness. Okay, that does it for the practice report for this first two sessions. I'll have a qualifying report early Monday morning, along with the normal race report like I've done, you know, for the past several races. But don't forget, Qatar is a Saturday race, so that by the time you hear this podcast even, there's a real good chance that the qualifying and possibly even the race itself is over. In the U.S., the race will not be televised until Sunday at, off the top of my head, I believe it's 3 p.m. Pacific time. So if you don't want any spoilers, you better not go to MotoGP.com after Saturday morning, assuming that you're holding out to watch the races on TV, because they just plaster it all over the front page in an unavoidable way, so that there's no way you can load the damn race that you're trying to watch because you paid 30 euros a year for it without seeing the results of the race, you know, unless you have somebody come and do it for you, you know. Please, you know, will you start this race for me so I don't see the finishers? It's kind of ridiculous. I wish they wouldn't do that. It's driving me crazy. That's why I'm always so hot on spoilers. Alrighty then, that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you very much for downloading it and listening. Like I said in the intro, I really do appreciate it. It is you, the MotoGPOD listeners, that have, you know, made this show a success. Look for a race wrap-up episode on Monday. Even though the race is actually taking place on Saturday, it's, like I said, it's not going to be televised here in the United States until Sunday, and I really prefer watching the cut-to-ribbons edited version on TV over the MotoGP.com compressed internet, generally impossible to log on version. So podcasting will commence on the normal schedule, despite the race being disrupted. But I will make it a good podcast, I promise. At least, I hope I promise. As always, if you'd like to send comments, suggestions, tips, hate mail, whatever, I read it all. The email address is motogpod@motogpod.com. Easy enough. And you may have noticed that I did a little bit of website redesign at motogpod.com, just kind of some shuffling around right now. It's still not a whole lot to look at, and I kind of don't think it ever will be. MotoGPOD is a podcast, an audio podcast, not a visual website. So the value and the content is in the episodes themselves, but the website is just kind of a way for you to find them, a handy holding place so that you can download them. Of course, the best way to do it is subscribe in iTunes, right? Yes, subscribe in iTunes. But look for continuing changes over time to that website, with, you know, improvements and some new features. There's a lot of stuff I want to do, and it's all a question of time and knowledge too. Frankly, I know a little bit about website design, but not a lot. And one thing I did add that you'll notice is a little linking button thingy down there in the lower left, so that you can listen to the guys on Formula Pod in kind of a pop-up radio player window. And in return, they gave me a link for MotoGPOD in that player. So if you've never listened to Formula Pod before, you really should give it a shot. They cover Formula One, which, surprise, surprise, hence the name, right? And they do it very well. It's a fun show. They sound like they're really having a good time. They're funny guys. It's two of them, you know, they've got the good rapport going on, and I always really enjoy the show. And they also do a ton of episodes, especially on a race week. It seems like there's like four or five per week. So there's always new stuff to listen to. So if you're an F1 fan at all, or even if you're not an F1 fan, sometimes, you know, you might want to pick something new up. Give it a listen. It's fun. It's worth checking out. Okay, with all that, I am signing off, so I will talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.